Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
Right, a question. I mentioned this may be an issue that's probably passed through the minds of most parents. Mm-hmm. I have a 3-year-old daughter. I'm concerned she's spoiled. When I was brought up, we were slapped. There were a handful of situations when slapping turned to something else. My parents went too far. I do remember fearing my parents at times, but I did know there were boundaries when they said no, not to push it. My parents also remember people complimenting them on their well-behaved children. My 3-year-old is an only child. She is hilarious, bright and super sassy. When I say no to something, she sometimes tests it, ignoring it. She starts screaming, running away, general meltdown, etc. When she has tantrums, I ignore them, calmly repeat no, get down to eye level. If she pushes or slaps, I say firmly, "We do not eat in this house," and repeat no. If a tantrum goes on too long or too far, I give her some alone time in another room to calm down. When she's finished, we resume with whatever we are doing, and she gets very upset. And if she gets very upset, she gets a cuddle. It's very disruptive and hard to be around. She is surrounded by adults a lot, and she does seem to expect a lot of attention. Am I rearing a spoiled child? My parents, sister, and my husband think she is spoiled. How can I be sterner without slapping? I have never slapped her. I don't want to, and I've never felt I've even been close to doing that. Equally, I don't want a spoiled child. I don't want to fail my daughter and raise an entitled madam.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things in this that just to go back to. I mean, I'm not a huge believer in the concept of spoiling children, particularly children this young. I think they can be overindulged. I think they can lack boundaries, and that can correlate to behaviour issues when they're older. But at 3 years old, and certainly three and under, we do know that the more, the research of attachment formation backs this up as well, that the more we respond to our young children's distress, the more we respond to their needs, the less needy they grow up to be, the less needy they become. So it's actually really important that you do respond to her needs. And still at this age, but that's not about spoiling. That's about raising secure children. And there is a difference, because that doesn't mean giving like carte blanche, anything goes, because it's all about, I just respond to her needs. If her needs are to shout, give her space to shout. That's not what I mean, because actually it's equally important in terms of raising a secure child that you have calm, clear, consistent, predictable boundaries. Mm. The second attachment cycle, once you've responded to their needs, young children this age, you know, certainly up to 2 and even 3 years old, now that you've met their needs, they tend to hit you with their wants. I want stuff. I want it now. They don't do impulse control. They don't do delayed gratification. When you say no, they simply hear that as an invitation for negotiations to begin.
Yeah.
So that is developmentally normal. So all of the things when you say no, you say she's testing it, ignoring it, screaming, running away, melt. That is all unpleasant, but developmentally very normal. From her.
Yeah.
What's really important is what you do in response to this. So when you've said no and she starts screaming, roaring, shouting and melting down, it's important you hold your no as opposed to giving in. Because if you give in, and I mean, look, we've all been there, you know, when somebody's screaming, 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 you might go, just for peace, give it to them, make them stop crying. But if we do that, we teach young children that screaming is a very effective form of communication and it's very effective for getting their needs met. It's really important. At least most of the time, nobody nails this all of the time, but at least most of the time that we're like, no, you can shout if you want, but the answer is no. And you hold the boundary, because when we hold boundaries and set limits for young children, they learn that there is somebody bigger, stronger, wiser and kind who's going to stop the situation and me getting out of control, who's going to make sure this doesn't go too far. Mm. Now, they're never going to thank you for that, but they will internalize it.
A lot of people listening who may be living through this right now, would ask the question, yes, but when do they learn that? Because they
around
don't seem
26.
To...
No.
I suppose that's the thing. Because a lot of people, you get up, you've had a good night's sleep, you say, right, today's the day.
And I'm going to nail this today.
And they never seem to...
And I think that's the key, is to get it mostly right most of the time, because there will be times, and it may be where you are if you're in the middle of a supermarket, that the easy and right thing to do in that moment is give in, just to get the job done. Mm. But it's that most of the time you are holding that boundary and that you are establishing my no means no. And that's really important. But you're going to be doing that in the second attachment cycle, which is certainly 12 to 24 months and frequently beyond. And bearing in mind that under 4 years old, young children do not, even if we think they get it, they know what they're doing, they do not consistently do cause and effect.
Yeah.
So when they're acting out behaviourally like this and we get cross or we get frustrated and we end up shouting, they just think we're being unreasonable and mean. They don't link it to what they're doing. They don't go, oh, it's because I pushed all of your buttons that you snapped and yelled at me. I better do differently next time. Mm. They don't do that. They instead go, gosh, why are you upset? Poor you. But I'm still having my meltdown and I'm not linking those up. So you can't discipline in its traditional form a child under four. You use distraction. It doesn't mean you tolerate. You say a very gentle yet firm no, coming down to their eye level, as this person's describing. I would suggest holding the hands of an irate 3 year old when you come down to their eye level, because otherwise you're at the perfect height for a punch. And I think if you say your no and then redirect them very quickly. But this idea about, you know, being stern or slapping, the research does not back up. And I know plenty of people are going to say, look, I was slapped, it did me no harm. And maybe yes, maybe no to that. But the research just does not back up that slapping teaches children positive lessons. It doesn't. It teaches fear. This person is even recalling fear from childhood. And I just don't ever understand how we can say to a child, stop hitting, by hitting them.
Yeah.
That mixed message is just really incongruent for them. The only other thing to pick up on here is that if her tantrum goes on too long, you give her some alone time in another room to calm down. Theoretically, I get what you're doing, but just bear in mind, a child of 3 years old cannot self-regulate. So by isolating her to calm down, it may be that the tantrum runs its course, but that doesn't mean that she has calmed down. She may just be exhausted from the tantrum. That's not the same as calming down. Children under seven co-regulate their emotional states in response to their carers. So you might need to practice time in rather than time outs with her. And time in means that you separate her from the action, whatever's, you know, causing the tantrum or wherever the tantrum is occurring, and you reset the field of vision, something like looking out a window and saying, oh, look at the birdie, or look at this, and let's find that. And that's a really good way to use distraction, but stay connected. Because if you can stay calm, now you won't stay completely calm, you'd be a saint, but if you can not get as aroused as she is,
and
she'll co-regulate.
But in fairness, the distraction doesn't always work. It's almost like they know you're trying to distract.
And you might
know.
Have to imagine, oh my goodness, is that a helicopter? Where?
Yeah.
And it is trial and error with children this young. It really is what works and what doesn't. But I do think that boundaries and limit setting are what you're looking for, distraction over discipline, and not to think about it as spoiling. If I don't slap her, she's spoiled. Boundaries don't require slapping. Mm. By the time a parent has slapped their child, it's because the parent has lost it, not because of what the child has done. Nobody sets out to slap their
children. It's a desperation
move, exactly.
Really, more than anything else. But do they kind of, can they, now this is a totally self-interested question. About 3 weeks ago, my 3 year old sleeps in her own bed. She was fine. Everything was grand. There's a step up to her room. And I put her to bed. Everything was fine. And then I was kind of walking up the stairs. And then I found her sitting on the step outside the room. And I had your reaction. I laughed. And in the moment of laughing, I thought, oh no, I'm shagged.
Yeah,
she's done it every night since then.
Absolutely.
Because she got a laugh. Yeah. No, she hasn't got a laugh since. But
doesn't matter.
Doesn't
matter. She's going to keep seeking to elicit that same initial response going, but I know you find it funny. And I know you're working hard not to laugh.
So they do have some inkling of cause and effect.
It's about repetition, though. She's seeking to repeat that connection, because really, when children get out of their bed, it's not that they're not tired and don't want to go to bed. It's that they don't want to separate from mum and dad yet. They want to have that further
FOMO
connection.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Toddlers and FOMO. Yeah.
A texter says, a child should never have a reward attached to the bad behaviour. Completely agree. Always stay consistent. Follow through in your boundaries. Would not give a big cuddle or any reward, e.g. toy or nice treats. Teaches child that you respect your word and respect yourself, and that teaches them how to respect themselves in future. A texter, another someone else says, an unspoiled child doesn't mean a slapped child. I would be very strict with my kids, but have never raised my hand to them. The word no is very effective, but it needs to mean no. I see a lot of friends give in to their kids after the third ask for something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People just are worn out, though. You know, again, I mean, none of us nail that no thing all of the time.
I know.
You know, there are times you go, yes, just have
sometimes with toddlers, you hear people saying, do you want to go to bed now? Don't ask them.
Oh, never ask.
Yeah.
You never ask. It's we're going to bed. And you make that sound like a really exciting adventure. But you're going to bed.
Hooray. We got a puppy at the end of January. My 5-year-old boy is being surprisingly quite rough with him. Will play nicely, then he will suddenly pull the paw and slap his nose, saying no. He's generally a gentle kid who maybe when he gets overly excited can play rough. But this seems different. Any tips to solve this? We all did puppy training and included him in parts of it. I thought he understood to be gentle, but he's still being rough. Could it be jealousy?
I mean, yes, perhaps it could be jealousy. Mm. I mean, there's a couple of questions, really. I suppose for me, looking at a 5-year-old doing this, because young children, you know, really young children, like we've just been talking about, a 3-year-old, they have constant trial and error, touch to learn processing. That's how they explore their environment and learn about themselves and the world outside of them. It's very sensory about containment. But at 5, he's definitely capable of cause and effect thinking, unless there's another developmental reason he's not. But given that's not named here, I would say he is capable of that kind of thinking. So perhaps it's jealousy. I suppose the question I'd have is he the youngest in your family? Because if that's the case, it's possible he's experiencing that the puppy has displaced him in the running order of the family.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Everybody's indulging this gorgeous new puppy and it's exciting and they need a lot of minding and nurturing. And he might be looking at that going as if it was a new baby because, you know, dogs, we can forget this, but dogs are pack animals by nature themselves. So they can also struggle and enter into a battle for dominance, for attention, for positioning in a family. And that can put a younger child's nose out of joint. So, I mean, and also you think when you get the puppy, usually it's because you've, you know, kids have been, please, can we have a dog? Please, can we? And you give in and you're like, yes, let's have a dog. And you plan it. And then you get the dog and they do something like this. And you're going, where did it go wrong? So it's great that you included him in parts of the puppy training. And it might be an idea to go back to whoever did your puppy training and have a gentle care session. Like ask them, could they meet with him and the dog and really model gentle care? Because I think you have to be calm and consistent with your gentle yet firm no. But you've really got to be careful about this because to be fair, you don't want the puppy to snap at him in response, which would be quite a natural thing for the dog to do, but could cause you other kinds of difficulties. So you want to say no to your son, what he's doing, take his hand, I think hold it. Make sure you are holding it and literally have him stroke the dog in a very gentle way, the way you want it done. And then name, oh, puppy really likes that. Puppy loves that. Puppy's really looking for you to keep doing that. You're such a good friend. Lots of positive affirmation about that. I think if you do this and he persists with the hitting or hurting the dog, then you have to remove him from the dog. Not removing the dog, but remove him from the dog to a separate space and address that with him directly as you would if you were disciplining him about anything else. Because there can be a kind of pseudo sibling rivalry that emerges with young children and new pets. So it does sound a little bit like that to me, but he is capable of understanding that he shouldn't do it. So this has gone on since the end of January. That's quite a long time.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so I'm just a little bit. It's going on quite a while now. I go back to basics and try what I'm saying, but I would encourage you to go back to your puppy trainer and get some guidance about could they, I think sometimes somebody outside of the family saying, this is how you care for puppies and this is how puppies feel if they get hurt and what that, doing a bit of empathy work with him around it and keep an eye on it. But I think you've got to really keep an eye on him with the dog so that he doesn't hurt the dog or the dog doesn't instinctively hurt him in response. There's just a bit of a safety issue there.
Right, we do have to take a break. I have more questions for Joanna after this. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us. The last question that we were talking about involved this 5-year-old and a dog that they got in January. And The five-year-old's been a wee bit rough occasionally with the dog. Mary says the child's too young to have a dog. Now, I think the family got the dog rather than the dog specifically belongs to the five-year-old. Someone else says that they call themselves a dog behaviourist, if that is their real name. Says dogs are not pack animals. Dominance and hierarchy are outdated models. Please hire a qualified positive reinforcement dog trainer and include your son. There are lots of hands-off ways he can be involved. They say, somebody else says, adore Joanna, don't want to disagree, but rehome that dog, get it out of your house. The child will provoke a bite at some point from the dog, either with that child or with the next boisterous kid. And then we all know the dog doesn't get a second chance. Rehome dog via a rescue centre and tell the child he can have a dog when he shows himself capable of acting appropriately. Do not use an animal as your learning tool, please.
No, I totally get what that person is saying. And I think that's my hesitancy about the safety piece. But I think getting rid of a dog for the rest of the family, that's a big decision. So I do think if a puppy trainer or what dog behaviourist, if a puppy trainer could affect positive change. But absolutely, if it was to continue, safety is a big issue with that one.
Yeah. But then again, then what age is the right age?
I don't think there's a set age. I think it's about a child's readiness for that. I mean, you could say the same about bringing siblings in, but you can't, you know, train kids to do that either. But some children just struggle with change and new family members, which a dog is, you know.
Yeah. Right, next question is this. Every time we visit friends and family, my two kids start asking for this and that from the hosts. Can I have this drink? Can I have chocolate? Can I have this food? I don't like that food. And when the food is put out, you'd swear they'd never eaten in their lives. They race to finish it and then look for more. I'm so embarrassed by their behaviour. They don't even say thank you half the time. I've told them countless times not to ask for anything, that if they are hungry, they should have asked before they leave, but it's always the same. I've told them if offered food not to be greedy, but they do it every time. How can I teach them to stop and be more polite?
Yeah, I mean, this is one that you're just going to have to really do the boundaries and the ground rules and really hold to it. Because I think food, for lots of children, food in a stranger's house or a relative's house is often way nicer than the same food in your house.
Isn't that weird?
You know, yeah. So they may well act like you've never fed them ever, because every biscuit and cake and treat in this other person's house is brand new and exciting, and they must have it all. And it's all part of the social engagement. And I think, you know, anyone will see that when a child refuses to eat a vegetable for you, but will clear the plate for granny on a Sunday. This is what they do. I wonder as well that they might be a little hyper aroused or overstimulated by the kind of excitement of being in someone's house, maybe with other kids. And food is often used by people, not just children, as a regulatory thing, you know, that we eat and it's nurture and it tends to calm and regulate us. So it might be, again, I'm being generous here now, but it might be spurned on by that. I suppose for me, rather than if they wanted food before leaving the house, they should have asked for it, I'd probably preempt this, given you're seeing it as a pattern, and I would feed them before you leave the house, or give them a snack on the way to whoever you're going to. And that way, if they seek food, you can interject and say, you've already had a snack.
Yeah.
You're not eating again until mealtime. Or you can say to the other adult, actually, they don't need a snack. They've already eaten and I want to make sure they're hungry enough for their dinner. We're not going to do snacks. And you can interject on their behalf. But otherwise, I would be using things like a little bit of role play and playing it out at home with their toys about what behaviour you want to see from them. Do not play out the bits you don't want to see, because you'll inadvertently reinforce them. But play out the little social scenario with the miniature toys, you know, little Duplo toys or Playmobil or whatever you have at home, and act out the scenario of going to someone's house, being polite, waiting to be asked, accepting what's on offer, or saying, no, thank you, I've had my snack already, and going about playing. So you can say to them in the house, look, you've had your snack, you're not getting anything else, now it's time to go and play. But I would want you to reinforce the behaviour you want to see through that small world play at home, because it's a pattern and it keeps happening.
Yeah, but I think, as you say, it's the excitement, the novelty,
the excitement
of
and
being
novelty
in somebody else's house and asking for something and getting it.
Loads of children do this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But if it's causing you this much social discomfort and embarrassment, couple of things you could try doing.
Yeah. Then again, I mean, the person, right, the parent is thinking that perhaps the people they visit are going, oh my God, you're a terrible parent. Your children are hungry.
They're not.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
They're certainly not saying, my goodness, wouldn't you think she'd feed her kids or he'd feed his kids? They're not saying that at all.
No dinner, we're off to Auntie Mary's. Exactly. Yeah. Right, another common issue, I imagine. I have a 17-year-old due to sit the Leaving Cert in June, and so far she has done very little study. She didn't do very well in her mock exams, and mainly because she didn't apply herself. I've tried sitting with her to study because I don't trust her to do it on her own in after-school study. I've tried talking to her about it and her future, but she says I'm nagging her and we end up fighting. How can I help her to do her best?
I mean, it's well-meaning on your part. I totally get that, but she's not wrong. You are kind of nagging her. And I think if you supervise and say you must study, all you can really guarantee is she's staring at words on a page until they start swimming in front of her eyes. You actually can't guarantee that she's learning or taking anything in. I think this is super frustrating for parents who just want the best for their kids and can see, give this your all and you'll get what you want to do next time. But at 17, you cannot make her do it. You can't want it enough for her. She has to want it too. So if you do want to support her, and I'd be using that word support her with her study rather than force or nag her into it, you could suggest a structure. So you could even reflect back that this is what you found useful with studying because you know how hard it is to sit and just read books over and over and get everything in there. But one thing that can help is, why don't I randomly pick a past exam paper and you spend the 90 minutes or the 2 hours completing that paper as best you can, and whatever gaps in the paper, those are the bits we'll then look up afterwards and I can test you on it and make sure you fill those in. But you're only asking her to sit and do the paper like it will be in the actual exams. So it's more that you're structuring study. Now, you still can't make her do it, I hasten to add. It's not like what I've just said, there is some magic solution, but it might enable, okay, look, I'll do it just to stop you. And it is a useful study technique anyway, because you're looking at, okay, well, I know this much, but I've got to pad out these bits.
Yeah.
So you could offer as well to help her do up some, you know, little learning cards, flip cards, and run through them with her and test her on dates in history or whatever, poems in English, whatever it might be. But if she says, no, I don't want your help, you've just got to let her do this.
It's an odd thing, isn't it? Because, you know, they're around 17, 18 doing the Leaving Cert, and you meet people that age who have a very clear idea of the future and what they need to do to get to that future, and other people the same age who have no sense of the future whatsoever.
Completely true.
And is that, could it be the 17-year-old just isn't mature enough to be doing the Leaving Cert?
It absolutely could be that, because you will get 17 or 18-year-olds who know, I need to get X number of points, and I can work backwards and say that means I have to make these certain grades in each subject to add up to those points, and they can work backwards. So now I know what I have to put in to get those grades. And others who are just like floating along, kind of going, it'll be grand, I don't mind. But maybe she doesn't know what she wants to do. Maybe she doesn't have a fixed desire yet on, this is where I see myself going. And that's showing through. And it's a big thing at 17 to, do you know what you want to do with the rest of your life?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big pressure. And maybe her answer is, no, I don't.
Yeah. Plus also the it makes a big difference, you know, whether you get lots of points in the Leaving Cert and you do something academic that leads to some sort of profession, if you like, for want of a better phrase, or you don't get lots of points in the Leaving Cert and you do something that acquires an apprenticeship or a level 5 course or whatever.
A different way of working towards
it. She has no idea whether she's going to be happy with that one path in life or the other path in life.
She doesn't know, and maybe she needs to do this, and what will come of it will come of it. And then she's going to have to make a choice herself. Do I go back and repeat that, or do I take an alternative route to something I want? And there are alternative routes. Going straight into third level education or a university setting is one option. It is not the only option. And she has her whole life to work this out. But I still understand, as the parent going, that's all well and good, Joanna, but she's doing her exams and she hasn't creased the cover of a book. There's just nothing, you can't do it for her, much as you'd want to.
Given what we were saying last week about when they tend to become adults nowadays.
Exactly.
It might be another decade before she creases the cover of a book. My 3-year-old son keeps pretending to be a bear. He will walk around on all fours, growling away at us, his brothers and other kids, especially if he's annoyed. At first we thought it was funny, but now it's really annoying and no longer a joke. He does it everywhere, at home, the shopping centre, at his granny's. I don't know why he does it or how to stop it.
It's really annoying and no longer a joke. I don't know like what made it annoying, but initially it was funny. And so you've given him an unintended mixed message. It was funny, now it's irritating. But he doesn't know what's changed because his behaviour has not changed. It's your response to it that has changed. So that's very difficult for a 3-year-old to compute that. I would look at, you know, for me, in lots of ways, I read something like this and I go, but isn't that great? Because, you know, the power of pretending in play is so important, and especially at that age. And a rich imagination is strongly associated with creativity. And maybe he's just a very creative, imaginative child who's immersed in his play, that when he's thinking about a bear, he is a bear and he can really bring that out. A bit of me would say to you, you know, why don't you meet him in his play, meet him in that world and get down on all fours and be a bear, be the mama bear or the papa bear, and he can be the bear and you can play as bears. And then you can very gradually de-role him with yourself saying, oh, we're not bears now. Now I'm mom or dad and you're whatever his name is. Mm. And you help him de-role, because that might not be easy for him to do, because no bears can come to the table for dinner. Only boys can. And you help him come out of it that way. Because the negative attention, don't forget, is still attention that he's getting. So for me, you want to spotlight the positive boy behaviours. When he's being a boy, say, oh, I love when you're being a boy and we can throw a ball to each other, because bears can't do that. And I love when we can do things that bears can't do that boys can do, and really reinforce it. I mean, I suppose for me, again, I'd look at how long is he doing this? And at the time it started, was there any change in his routine, anything at all, a change in mind or transitioning to preschool, whatever it might have been? Because you see, if you can identify the needs that prompted his behaviour, that will enable you to respond to the needs. Mm. So his behaviour isn't necessary.
They say, especially if he's annoyed, that's the only... That sounds more than it's just a game then.
Yeah, it's a little bit like he's growling at a bear because he's angry. But we do tend to have in stories angry bears and growling bears.
Yeah.
And it can be an expression. Now, if you're saying, well, this is going on 18 months, it's escalating, he now is more bear than boy and I can't get him out of it, I would say, you know what, you could consult with a professional.
I was going to say a zoo.
For you. A professional zookeeper who take him off your hands. No, that you could bring him, you know, for early years assessment. They'll just look at and see, you know, does he really understand he's not a bear?
Yeah.
For me, though, I'd really be erring at 3 years old on the side of this is rich pretend play, rich imagination, and don't give it too much focus. If you're only talking about it's going on a couple of months, it'll run its course. But if you spotlight it as something that's really, really interesting and consuming for you all, it'll linger.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. What made Shakespeare a star?